Hey everybody, it's Corey Woodruff here with the Falcoholic post-game podcast. Just wanted to put in a pre-show note before we get things started out here. We obviously did not know about Keanu Neal's ACL injury when we recorded this on Friday morning. That news was not unveiled until later in the day. So the conversation does not reflect that piece of what came out of Thursday night's game against the Eagles, but obviously that's a big blow to the defense that's trying to elevate into being one of the league's better units. I don't think it's going to be unit crushing at all. I think that they can withstand this with some of the pieces that they have and perhaps a veteran addition, like an Eric Reed perhaps, so you can go check out some articles we have over at the Falcoholic that have concerned the Keanu Neal injury. If you'd like to kind of read up on what we all think is going to happen and what we kind of mourning the season that once was, as we do have a eulogy piece that's really good you can check out. But wanted to let you know that that's where the conversation did not go quite, but we didn't go there because we were not aware. So thanks for listening to the show, and I hope you enjoy the episode. Thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to our very first regular season episode of the Falcoholic Postgame Podcast. My name is Corey Woodruff. I'm your host, and I'm doing okay, I guess I could say. It's just one of those games that you just have to kind of look at it with hopefully the proper perspective. And to help me do that, I have got a Falcoholic writer with us today, Adnan Ekic, who is very nice enough to join me the morning after to discuss whatever in the world happened Thursday night. So, Adnan, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, man, it's great to be here. How are you doing, Corey?
I'm okay. I'm judging by my when I got home last night, I wrote my post-game article, and it was another one of my like 1,000+ worders. So that always tend to like generate the comments to get people being like, "Ah, I can't believe you're saying all this," because I am generally a pretty positive fella. So I try to see the glass half full, I guess you could say, which I think you can from this game. I think that there were a lot of positive takeaways, even though that it just didn't seem like it in the moment. But let's just start out with you, man. Tell me where you're at. Like, give me some sort of a vista of, what you're seeing with this Falcons loss, unfortunately.
I was a lot worse right after the game, and I mentioned it on the Falcoholic Live with Kevin. It was actually one of our writers, DW, who just talked me off the ledge, talked us all off the ledge with his positivity. And I mean, yeah, you're right. There were a lot of positives to take away from this game, which we'll get into. The defense was excellent. Julio Jones had one of those games. And but what's really frustrating is that it was right there. And you look at all of those missed opportunities, all of those missed chances. We ended up having a drive to the Philadelphia Eagles 1, to the Eagles 5, and to the Eagles 15 three separate times, and we came away with 0 points on those three drives. And then when you look at the fact that the Eagles got past midfield just three times in that game, and they got points on all of those drives, you can't help but wonder what could have been. This could have been such a more festive and joyous podcast had we just taken advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think when you look at what the Falcons didn't do, I mean, it was a red zone game. I think when you try to acknowledge, like, okay, what exactly did they need to fix? What do I really need to take away from this? I think you take away that when the Falcons have everything working against them, right? Because that's what this game was. Everything went against them. There was not a moment where they got a break. They might have gotten one fortunate call on a hold that didn't get called, that led up for a first down or that stopped the drive or something. But even then, it's like this was just one of those things where the rain poured on them and they just got drenched. But at the same time, they almost won. Like, if Julio's like half a foot into the end zone, they win that game on a walk-off touchdown. So I think when you try to look at the big picture, I think would be the thing I would tell everybody right now is just try to look at this from a grand sense. On a night where Matt Ryan probably played the worst game he's played since Kyle Shanahan's first season, all right? Like, this was a 2015 Colts Matt Ryan performance, where he is just making errant decisions left and right and just does not look at all comfortable with anything that's going on. I think you have to take into account his knee brace being off and that kind of throwing him out of a rhythm against a really good defense, and he's trying to get acclimated with Julio and Devonta back in the lineup. Nothing was working in their favor. Ryan was playing poorly. Sark was not calling good plays in the red zone. I actually kind of liked the way that the offense was running outside of his obsession with creating plays in the backfield. The screens and the slants and the sweeps. I don't understand his obsession. I think he's trying way too hard to force in that Shanahan big play mentality where you create the play behind the line of scrimmage and just kind of let him pop up the field and beat you with his speed and talent. I think they've got to get that out of their system. But I think that Thursday night was a great time where Quinn can sit down with Sark and Knapp and say, yeah, this isn't working. We can't keep running plays like this in the middle of the field, but they kept getting the first downs. You know, it was a bit reminiscent of 2017, I think, but at the same time, they still on this defense were able to move the ball. Just when they came, they had five red zone opportunities and they only came away with 6 points. And I think that that is relatively inexcusable. Obviously there was the latter touchdown with Tevin, but I think when you size up where this team is right now, you have to say that they still almost won this game. And that means something. That even when everything is going against them, they are still able to go out and put forth a drive to be able to close things out. This is a bit more reminiscent of how the Smith era worked with Smitty, is that the team may not play great, but they can still put together that last second drive because of Ryan and the talent and still almost beat a really good team. And again, please don't look at Philly and think that they were slouches. That defense was largely intact and they still had enough depth to look fine, you know, for what they were doing. So my thesis of this is, yes, it's okay to be upset. Yes, you can be frustrated and critical of what happened, but at least try to see the bigger picture so that this is just Raven week one and they still almost won. It was very, very, very close. So, and again, I think this was the game a lot of us were kind of expecting in a general sense.
Oh, yeah. And the fact that it was raining didn't help at all. The fact that it was storming before the game, I said it myself, that was a huge advantage for the Eagles because of the way they wanted to play this game. They wanted to grind it out. They lined up in those two tight end sets. They wanted to pound the rock. They wanted to have short plays with Nick Foles. And you made a great point about that defense. I mean, that's still a defense which, other than having a suspended Nigel Bradham, was largely intact. That defensive line is the best defensive line the Falcons will face all season long. Fletcher Cox, Haloti Ngata, Michael Bennett. I mean, you got to give credit where it's due with that defensive line because they were plugging up the holes. They were stuffing the run. They were getting pressure on Matt Ryan. And I mean, just that first drive, Devontae Freeman gets stuffed at the goal line three times to the point of a turnover on downs. And you have to take the points on that first drive. No matter how good you are moving the ball, this is a Falcons team which is known to struggle on short yardage situations because our offensive line is leaner for the zone blocking scheme. They aren't the biggest dudes. And you get stuffed on third and goal, you have to take those points. And you look at it, if you take those points on that first drive, and if you don't miss that extra point after the Tevin Coleman touchdown, that's 4 points added on. And you're in position to win the game with a field goal at the end of that, on that final drive, instead of going for the game-winning touchdown, which we again couldn't get in the red zone. We had five downs after that illegal contact penalty, one from the five, and we couldn't get it done. I read Kurt Warner posted on Twitter, the Eagles ran the exact same defense every single time on those last five shots, and Steve Sarkisian and the offense just couldn't figure it out. That's unacceptable. And I mean, what can you do? That's just down to offensive play calling.
There was some unacceptable red zone malaise, I think, that really hurt them in terms of trying to accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. But at the same time, I don't know exactly shoulders the most blame in terms of defense, and you're not switching things up. I think that when you red zone, he kind of hits two extremes. He tries to be too clever, or he tries to be too safe. And there's just, he's got to find a balance, I think, in calling play. He doesn't have to be creative every single time. Sometimes you just use your bread and butter. Sometimes you just go for the ham on rye. You just do the thing that you're most comfortable with, and we won't know that works. I think that's where you see frustration with not throwing the ball to Julio as much. Like, you know, if you throw it to him enough times, he'll catch it once. So I think when you see, like, at the same time, the Devonta Freeman, when they kept trying to pop it in, and they kept trying to force something that obviously was going to be tough. And I think that, you know, Ricky Ortiz did miss a block that caused Devonta not to be able to get, I believe, that fourth down attempt where they might have scored. So there were some execution issues. But at the same time, I think with Sark, and again, I don't think that he doesn't not have the ability to find this. I think that would be my biggest takeaway is, like, there is still enough of a brain trust in Atlanta that feels like Sark's going to be okay. And there really was not a whole lot of worry that was coming out of that locker room that he wasn't going to be able to figure things out. I think that, you know, when you watch Sark, he may have just needed a week to kind of get his footing back under him with all of his tools till he gets in his rhythm himself. And now he's got Greg Knapp, who's reading the defenses for him. It's a new relationship. I think they need time to forge that. But I'd like to see him find a balance between using what you're good at and trying to take advantage of what defenses are not expecting. Like, if you really want to use, like, a Saubert or a Calvin Ridley or somebody more unexpected in the red zone, I think that's great. But at the same time, don't be afraid to just use the guys that you know will work. And again, also don't try to overuse that, right? Like, if Freeman's not getting in with a run, maybe try to drum up a pass, get the tight ends involved. I still feel like, you know, with Sarkisian, there still was this probably, I think he's a timid play caller until he gets comfortable. And I think he might have needed a week just to get his feet under him and just try to get into a rhythm for the new year. Because of all the criticism and kind of hype that he's been facing coming into this year and all the expectation, that's a hard for a guy. I mean, you know, I think when we all think we could do it better until we're on the field. And then what happens is, you know, your human instincts kick in and you're like, oh, wow, now I've got to go do my job. It seems easy. It seems like you could do it. But then again, like, there's a reason that these jobs are not, like, there's really not that much competition, right? Like, it takes a certain kind of person to, like, be able to man this kind of a role. So I think when you look at Sark, like, he's going to make some mistakes a little bit early this season because he's got to get in his own rhythm because he struggled last year. He reminds me a lot of Duke Riley last year, honestly. Like, just things did not go well. Some weeks it might have kind of gone good, but sometimes it just really, really didn't. These younger people, when they're getting acclimated to the league, they need time to get adjusted. And I think that when you look at Sark, you just have to really look at him and go, look, it's not good that you're not making the same, you know, you're not making the adjustments you need to in the red zone early in the season. But at the same time, it's like, well, it's also a week. And also the Eagles are really, really good down in the red zone. Maybe this was just, and again, his quarterback was not playing well. And we haven't talked about Ryan yet, but Ryan really did not have a good night at all. It was a bad Ryan night. Every couple of years, he'll have one of these performances where he just absolutely poops the bed. And I don't know what Sark is supposed to do when his quarterback's not playing well. Like, that absolutely affects the way he's calling plays, even if he is getting more comfortable. And again, I think you saw them move the ball with relative ease early in that game. The play calling was fine. They were moving the ball. They were running the ball, getting passes off to Julio. And then they just stalled out. And I don't know who exactly shoulders the most blame there. Do you put it on Ryan for being crappy? Do you put it on Sark for not getting enough experience in the offseason to be able to make these progressions against a really good defense? I don't know. Maybe their ceiling is just they're not going to be able to do as much against these really, really, really great defenses with the play calling as it is, and they're going to have to rely on their defense. Maybe that's the case. I have no idea, but I think when you try to figure out where this team is going offensively, I think you have to look at this week and go, there was a lot that was going wrong, but at the same time, even in 2017, not this much went wrong all the time. So it makes it seem like it's more of an anomaly.
No, and I mean, I hope you're right. I hope that it was just a case like Kyle Shanahan in 2016 where he just needed that week, needed to get through week one. Because you remember how bad the offense looked against the Bucs at the start of 2016. We were ready to run Kyle Shanahan out of town after that game. Just replace him immediately. And I hope we get a repeat of what happened that year in week two where the offense just snap, woke up against the Raiders, put up 35 points, and then never looked back from there. Became a historic offense. But it's still so troubling. We've been told all offseason about how they've been working on the red zone issues the entire summer. Oh, all we need is just a couple wrinkles here and there, just a couple tweaks here and there. And for them to come out in the red zone and play that poorly, it's concerning. It's entirely concerning. That first drive, we didn't take the points. We had the ball on the goal line three straight plays and couldn't score. We had the ball on the last drive. And you mentioned it with Matt Ryan. On that last drive, Matt Ryan, he was great up until we got to the 10. And then he threw five balls that went out of bounds. He didn't even give his receivers a chance. And that's on him. But it's also on the scheming, on the play calling. If the Eagles are running the exact same defense every single time, as an offensive coordinator, you have to see that. And you have to adjust to it. Because that's the difference in the game. And I get it. We were kind of shafted by the refs on that Julio Jones 52-yard catch, which was obviously catch. That not only cost us that drive, it cost us potentially points. It cost us a timeout, which ended up being huge at the end of that game. But you have got to take it. You have got to get points when you get into the red zone, and not just field goals. You have to get some touchdowns too. We scored one touchdown this game for as good as we were driving the ball, moving it down the field. We can't keep stalling out when we get to the red area. And I mean, I'm not ready to run Sark out of town yet, but if this keeps happening, if we get to week four, week five, and this is still a prevailing issue, then some really tough questions will have to be asked of this offensive brain trust.
No, I think that's completely fair. You know, even though I'm a bit, you know, I'm always try to be optimistic, but there were points even last season where I was getting a bit fed up with, you know, kind of some of the inconsistencies. Now, obviously, they made a turnaround on the offense and were a bit more stable right around the after that Panthers game, where they were able to kind of rip roar into November and then kind of get more wins and make it to the playoffs and obviously beat the Rams. But no, I think you're right. I think that, you know, while I do not recommend at all trying to read too much into this game, and I expect them to be better, if somehow they are not, then you really have to start having this conversation, not in November, but at the end of September. If we're going up against, you know, again, the defenses are good up until there's really not a bad defense they face for the rest of the month. I mean, the Panthers have a good defense, the Saints have a good defense, and the Bengals will have a good defense. They actually have a pretty stout defensive line. So the tests are going to be there for them going forward. I mean, obviously you get two at home, that helps. Like, the home mentality is, you know, needs to be like, we need to get these wins now, and we need to make sure we're doing everything we can, particularly with two division games coming up. If the offense looks like it did last night at the end of September, I think you really have to start, if you're Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff, having some pretty frank conversations of knowing what you're capable of and knowing what you're not doing. Because again, the reason I'm not worried about it as much is because I'm not really expecting this offensive performance ever again. I really feel like this was just a quick stop at a really unfortunate location, and they'll get better. But again, you're right. If they're not, and we're still dealing with this in mid-October, that means that there really have not been any progressions, and that Sark really is not acclimating into this role like he needs to. I'm pulling for Sark. I really am. I really hope that he's able to do what I think he will and be marginally better than he was last night and get this offense looking more like a, you know, good Mike Smith offense. I'm not expecting a 16 turnaround here. And I know some, you know, when I say on Twitter that you have to, again, when we talk about this Bucs game, I'm not saying they're going to be historic, but I'm saying, like, you're right. Like, when you look at this week, you have to be able to take into account that they do different things when week two rolls around with Quinn. They typically find more of their groove. They typically find more of a foothold on being who they want to be for the rest of the season. There just seems to be something with this team in week one that just doesn't really click, or maybe they just really have to shake off the dust to be able to be the team that Quinn wants them to be. But again, if they don't make this turnaround, like I think that they will, and I'm wrong here, then I'm happy to indulge in the idea that Sark really is not the person that needs to be guiding this offense. I don't like to advocate for people's firing because this goes past a sport. This is people's livelihoods. You don't want to ever see anyone get fired from their job. But at the same time, you know, I understand that there are millions of people that are just really not happy right now with the way that they're playing on offense. And it seems like it's carrying over some of the similar problems like we saw last season. So I would just say, forgive the pun, give them a rain check, okay? Give them an opportunity to fix this week and to really get more comfortable, okay? Because while the Panthers have a good defense, their defense is nowhere near as good as the Eagles. The Falcons will be at home. These teams obviously know each other well. Also, even in that Super Bowl season, the Falcons still lost to the Eagles in Philly and were not able to score many points. I mean, this is just a bad matchup for Atlanta. I think that's another thing you really have to key in on. This is just not a favorable matchup at all. They've had to go up to Philly for three straight games like this, okay? Like, they've beaten the Eagles once in the Quinn era. That was before Peterson and Wentz and Foles, when it was Chip Kelly and Sam Bradford. But after that, they've had to play the Eagles every season, and it's always had to be in Philly, and it's always had to be an opportunity where the Falcons just have not measured up to what they need to do. There's just something about what Peterson and Schwartz are doing that is like Atlanta's kryptonite. Again, if they see each other in the playoffs and the team has to go to Philly, I'm much more reserved to say, I don't know if they can do that. Because every team has that one team that has their number. Yep, like, even the Patriots have that team that has their number. So, the Giants, like, everybody's got that one. And I think Atlanta just happened to have had to see their one twice already this year. So, I'm trying to be level to understand the people that are worried, because it's fair and it's valid. And if it continues, it needs to be discussed more. But I think right now you just kind of have to look at this as a weird prism for how the year won't necessarily look.
Oh, no, like, you're completely right. Every team has their one, and we're frustrated with Philadelphia. This is exactly how the Packers feel about us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they had to come up here to Atlanta between 2016 and 2017 three times in the calendar year, and the Falcons barely won that first game and then stomped them in the NFC title game and in the week two matchup, where it wasn't as close as the scoreline indicated. But, I mean, you're right. We should be better moving forward. We're playing at home against the Carolina Panthers. Thomas Davis will be out. We're playing at home against the New Orleans Saints. Mark Ingram will be out. And it's just, these are two huge divisional matchups at home. And if we make it out of this 2-1, nobody will remember this game. Nobody will be looking back, panicking the way many people are now after this week one game. But I mean, there were a lot of positives to take away from this game too. The defense did its job in every facet of the game. If you only give up, what, 18 points, that's good enough. That's good enough to win. The defense was generating pressure. Nick Foles got pressured on 25% of his dropbacks. The defense got that big turnover with DeMonte Casey, who was an unsung hero. He comes in for Keanu Neal, who gets injured. And Casey just does not miss a beat from that preseason, where he was arguably the best player on the defense. He forces that interception to Deion Jones, which leads to the touchdown for Tevin Coleman. And I mean, it's really good to see. And I have the utmost confidence that this defense will be top 10, maybe even top 5 this year. And all we need from the offense is to average 24 points a game. That's not asking too much with the amount of talent that this offense has. You don't have to be world beaters. You don't need to average 33.8 points per game the way you did in 2016. Just give us something manageable and the defense will take it from there. And we will make a deep postseason run. But like you said, the problem is now Philadelphia owns that tiebreaker over us. And if we meet them in the playoffs in January, it'll most likely be in Philadelphia. It'll be in the cold. Carson Wentz will probably be back. And I mean, I like to be as optimistic as anyone, but I just don't know. That team just dominates the trenches, and we aren't good against teams that are built on the offensive and defensive lines to just dominate, because football at the end of the day is a game won in the trenches. It always has been. No matter how much finesse, no matter how many skilled position players you have, it comes down to the big guys up front. And Philadelphia is just better than us at that. They have a better O-line than us. They have a better D-line than us. And their offensive and defensive lines just win the day when they play us.
And I think that's the fascinating thing. Like, I don't even know how good the Eagles will be generally this year. Like, you look at all that they've lost. Like, I think that Philly fans might be a bit cavalier to suggest that this is what they'll look like every week, even with Foles, because they looked pretty putrid down the stretch with Foles in the lining with the starting lineup in December last year. And it wasn't until, you know, ta-da, they get to Atlanta that they're able to do what they did. And then obviously Foles got hot and nobody was ready for him. And that's why they won the Super Bowl with that, along with the defense in the trenches. But yeah, I think the point with the Packers is great because you really look at, you know, a team that Atlanta has the number for, would give you more hope that even if the Packers are really good this year, that Atlanta can go up to Lambeau and kind of do better work. I think that, you know, I'm curious, like, how Philly will be in general this year because they've still lost a lot of brain trust. And I think that right now, the Keanu injury to me is what lost Atlanta the game. I think if I'm just being, in terms of a realist, in terms of if everything is happening, I still think they win the game if Keanu Neal can play the entire time. Vienna Falcons on Twitter, who's a really good follow, he tweeted a very interesting statistic about the rushing attack for the Eagles pre and post Keanu. Before Keanu's injury, they were 8 for 16 attempts, 2 yards averaged on the ground, and 25% success rate. After Keanu's injury, they were 19 attempts for 100 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 5.3 yards per completion, and a 53% success rate. Obviously, I'm not a statistician, so I apologize if I completely mangled these wonderful statistics, but you can see from that, when Keanu left the game, the Eagles' run defense took a major uptick. Like, when they were able to get that in, that changed that entire course of that game because the Eagles were doing nothing on offense for, goodness gracious, it feels like a pretty lengthy stretch. Like, they really just did not have a lot working for them outside of I believe it was Nelson Aguilar being able to kind of get open on a couple of routes. But once Keanu left the game, it completely changed the way the Falcons had to adjust the run defense. And again, I think KZ is a really nice, you know, hard-hitting safety. And I think he impressed me a bit more in his coverage abilities than I kind of was expecting. But you can't expect him to bring to the run game what Keanu does. And that changed everything for Atlanta. Again, even though the Atlanta offense was just not great at all, Matt Ryan was stinking it up. This defense still was almost good enough to win the game by themselves. I mean, that was outside of what Julio was doing. That was about a single-handed victory. Because if Keanu stays in, I don't think the Eagles get the run game going. And if the Eagles don't get the run game going, then they're really not that great of an offense with Foles behind center. Maybe it changes when Wentz comes back, but I think that's really where it changed is you look at that Keanu injury, and thankfully it doesn't appear that it's serious. He's getting an MRI to get things kind of double, triple checked. But I think that goes to show that the Falcons now can look at Keanu Neal as one of those guys you can't lose. Like, he is that important to your game that if he leaves, your entire run defense just drastically changes because Debo still has, you know, Deion Jones is amazing and he's gotten better in his run defense, but he's still a smaller linebacker. He doesn't quite have that ability that Keanu does just to be a, you know, cannonball to go attack a lot of these bigger runners, especially like a Jay Ajayi, who is a big runner, okay? I think that's the reason that the Falcons have struggled against him is because when Keanu can't fully keep him in check, like, he's just able to run around the bend. And I think the run defense is much better this year. You look at what they were doing to limit Ajayi and limit Clements and limit the rest of the backfield. They had Sproles. I mean, they have a lot of versatility in their running back core. But, you know, I think when you look at what Atlanta needs to be thankful for, it's that Keanu's healthy. Maybe he might miss a game or two, but he's not going to be out the year, it doesn't appear like. And again, if I'm wrong on that, sorry. But you have to, like, I think, give the defense a lot of props because even though it was a sloppy night for penalties, they still limited this Doug Peterson run offense to 18 points. And the only reason that they let up a lot of those points was probably because Keanu was out of the lineup. If Keanu stays in, we might be talking about, well, the Falcons didn't play great, but hey, they got the win. But that's football. I mean, you cannot account for injuries. So I think that if you want to take away a big takeaway, you know, take away a takeaway, if I be verbose here, from this game, I would just say maybe the Falcons just had nothing working for them. And when nothing is working for you, particularly in the injury department, because again, there were spells where Deion Jones got hurt, Tack McKinley got hurt, Vic Beasley got hurt, like key guys that you can't have getting injured. You know, that's your two bookend rushers. That's your main middle linebacker. Desmond Trufant was out with a calf strain, like, or a cramping. Like, these are all your, basically your best defensive players outside of Grady and Ricardo Allen. And when they go out, yeah, your defense is not going to look as sharp. But when they're all on the field and they're healthy and they're playing together, this is a really good defense. And I think that Thursday night confirmed that. But it was just one of those, you know, terrible, horrible, no good, very bad evenings. And I'm not going to read much into it. If you want to, I don't blame you, because I get the stark criticisms. I really do. I'm not happy with the guy. I think he could have done a better job, but I'm willing to give him some time to get this worked out of his system. And again, I'm never going to expect Matt Ryan to play like that for the rest of his career. I think that is just a complete anomaly performance, and I'm not really at all going to think that that's going to be Ryan now, because I think that would just be a bit foolhardy.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you're right about Keanu Neal. And the thing about Keanu is, it's a huge, huge victory if Keanu Neal is not out for an extended amount of time. Like, I will go as far to say as I will take this loss if it means that Keanu Neal will be back soon, as opposed to taking a win and Keanu is out an extended period of time, or maybe the entire season. I was terrified that he went down with a torn ACL last night. And I was so relieved when I saw the report that Dan Quinn thinks it's nothing serious and we still have to wait on the MRI. But hopefully it's nothing serious, because like you said, our run defense drastically changes when Keanu Neal is out of the game, because he is a Pro Bowl level strong safety in the NFL. And he's getting better each offseason, each year. Keanu Neal is one of the most important players on our defense. And mad props to DeMonte Casey for coming in and for having the game he did, because those are big shoes to fill. And Casey filled them exceptionally well. He's looking like a fifth round steal in that 2017 draft.
Yeah.
Like, what a draft pick. What a draft pick that was. And that's how, that's the blueprint to dynasties right there. Getting those late round picks. That's how Seattle, that's how the Seahawks became such a force in the NFC. With those late round draft picks, which ended up being home runs, the Richard Shermans, the Cam Chancellors, the KJ Wrights. And I mean, I just hope, even if he's out for a game or two, I just hope that he'll be back soon. And but unfortunately, right now, these are two of our most important games of the season coming up against the Saints and Panthers. The fact that if he's out for both of those games, man. You got to face Alvin Kamara without Keanu Neal. Seems like a tough task to ask for from the defense, but hopefully they're up for it. Jay Ajayi, who normally torches us, had only 62 yards on 15 carries. He did have the two touchdowns. Corey Clement, if you take away his 21-yard rush, he had four carries for 5 yards. It was the Nelson Aguilar jet sweep, which got them 16 more yards in offense. Our run defense did a good job. I thought they would gash us in the run game. I was pleasantly surprised to be wrong. And I mean, we just need Keanu back. Also, I have no idea how we fell for this Philly special after that Super Bowl. I was infuriated. That was on a 3rd and 8, and for them to pull that on us.
I think somebody said last night from the Eagles that that actually was like the play that the Patriots used against them in the Super Bowl with Brady that didn't work. Like, cause it put, it kind of put the quarterback out on like a sweep, and then they kind of, I guess they hit it with Foles cause the Patriots couldn't figure it out. But yeah, you wonder like, come on, you're really going to fall for something like that. Like, I think Vic Alan Sterk, who was at the game last night covering it for the Falcoholic, talked to Vic, and he's like, "I cannot believe we fell for that. Like that's obviously frustrating, because that's such an easy play to like catch. You know what it's gonna do. You've seen it pretty frequently. It won the Eagles the Super Bowl, but yeah, man, I think we've tried to find the center of this game. And again, be frustrated if you want to be frustrated. But at the same time, if you're worried about the schedule ahead, I'm not saying it's the same situation, but everybody thought they were going to go 0-6 after that Bucks loss. And then they just rallied off a bunch of wins and then won the NFC Championship. You never know. I'm not saying that, like, again, my enthusiasm for the Falcons and where their ceiling is took a little bit of a hit. Because at the same time, while I think that they're going to be a much better team than what they were Thursday night, also, you know, when you really get into these like Minnesotas and these Eagles and these even New Orleans, like that are just built in the trenches, that the teams have built them up, you kind of wonder, okay, how is this going to go exactly? Because I think one of Atlanta's big things is that they've really tried to rely on the coaching to really build up some dependencies with the talent that we don't like to talk about, but there's also just so much overwhelming talent elsewhere that it tends to kind of make you think that they've got the right balance. But you know, when you go up against one of these teams that just have a suffocating pass rush like Philly or Minnesota or maybe even New Orleans if Okafor is healthy and back and that Marcus Davenport has a good season, like, you know, you've really got to not really change who you are, but make more of an effort to try to find out different ways to win those games. Because I think the Falcons have the talent and enough of the staff to do that. So don't quit trying to do the same thing. Do something different. Like be creative, be out of the box. Because again, that's where you win the game, when you're being creative with your coaching. You win it when you're finding ways to beat these teams that other teams aren't finding. And again, does Atlanta have that ability? I don't know. I don't want to be too sugar-coated and say they automatically do, because I don't know. I think that they've got enough talent to win any game that they're in, but at the same time, I also think that there has to be a bit of a coaching uptick. So I think we've gone over our entire spectrum of ideas, man. Any other thoughts you've got on kind of what you're thinking for what this game means for the rest of the year?
I mean, this game in a vacuum, it's just one game. We're 0-1. At the end of the season, we remember 2016. Nobody remembered that Tampa Bay Bucks game at the end of the year. I just hope that this game doesn't end up costing us home games in the playoffs, because this team should be in the play. If this team isn't in the playoffs, then a lot of questions will have to be asked of this coaching staff, because this team is way too talented to not be making a run in the postseason. And at the end of the day, I hope this game is just one speed bump at the beginning of the road. It sucks. It was on prime time. All of America watched it.
Yeah.
I mean, that does suck. But it's just one game. It's a game that I thought we were going to win. I was hoping we were going to win. But it is just one game after all. And if we're 3-1 at the end of this month, which I think we will be with home games against the Bucks, Panthers, and then playing a home game against the Bengals too, then nobody will look back and remember this game.
Yeah, that tends to be where I think the most logical answer will be, is that you're going to see, I think they're going to really be like that 2012 team with a better defense and maybe just a bit of a less good offense. Like if you maybe take the offense down a hair and put the defense up a decent amount, like I think that's who these Falcons will end up being. I think there'll be weeks where they score like 30, 40 points and they look like the old team, but then there'll also be weeks where they just score like 15 points and just get out of Dodge with a good defensive performance. So, you know, who's to say? It's early. It's just so early. And like last year, you look at that Bears game and I remember thinking like, all right, it was just week one. They got the win. They're going to be fine. And it ended up being a bit more telling than I hoped it was going to be, because again, like Chicago was not a good football team. And I think if Atlanta had caught them in like November, you know, at least last year they weren't. Bears still had a really good defensive line and did some things that hurt Atlanta, but you don't want to have an offense that wilts every time they see a really good defensive line. Like that's just, that can't happen. So I think with Atlanta from here, you just try to take from this game, what you take from this game is that they are still getting acclimated to the year. They played a really good team. Nothing went their way. Give them time to find their niche. If for some reason they don't find it with this kind of a roster, you know where the problem is, and it's not with the players. I think that's the, at least that's where I am at. Like if we're having this conversation in October, then I'm not going to be too critical of much else than what's being called with the plays. And even not even Quinn. Like, I think it will go squarely to that offensive coaching staff and what they're not doing to get these guys going. Because this offense should be top five if they have a competent coach. This should be one of the most ferocious teams in the NFL with the talent that they have. But at the same time, give them time, folks. It'll happen. Adnan, thank you so much for coming on, man. Let the people know where they can find you on social media and what you've got cooking at the Backaholic.
You can find me mainly. I'm on Twitter at SayWhichWay. There's a story behind that name. I'm not going to get into it right now at that handle. But yeah, no, look out for my fantasy football pieces on the Falcoholic. I do a stardom sit-em each week, and I do a fantasy stud and fantasy dud each week. I'll be going over the results of that other NFC South games, as well as a few more projects here and there throughout the week. So, I mean, yeah, you can find me on Twitter, find me on the website, and, I mean, it'll be okay. Let's just get off from that ledge. It's a long season, man. It's a long season.
It is a very long season. It's only week one. Just come on. Again, remember 16. I'm not saying they're going to be historic, but they just were not the team they were against the Bucks for the rest of that year, except for when they played Philly. So, yeah, just everything went wrong for Atlanta. It was week one. It was a team that they played poorly against. We'll make it. Everything's okay. And if it's not okay, at least we know where the problem is. This is not an undiagnosable issue. So that's what we've got for the folks. The Falcoholic post-game podcast, everybody. You can find me on Twitter at CoreyWoodruff47. Read everything I've got over at the Falcoholic. I've got a nice, cheery column for you waiting where I use Aesop fables to try to ease your concerns with where the Falcons are at the moment. Be sure to read everything we've got at the Falcoholic. Read Adnan's stuff. He's doing a really good job with everything. And, man, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man, of course.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seemed smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.